He studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Sheikh Javid, since we are talking about the Islamic laws about mourning ceremonies during the month of Muharram, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas, I would like to ask you a question about the Passion Show, or what we call as the, you know, ta'ziyah or reenactment. What's his view on the traditional reenactment of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, you know, which may have some positive effect on the minds of people because they would see the historical accounts, basically, when they see it's like a show to them, you know, and they would, you know, get to know what happened to the, you know, noble families of the infallible, I mean, the Holy Prophet and you know, Imam Hussein and his members of the family.
You're right. It does have a lot of positive effect on the minds of people who go to watch these events and these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people show positive reaction. They have feelings of sadness and grief. They shed tears. I have seen many
yes.
people from close. And that's why these shows or these, you know, reenactment of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions are good. Because, as you rightly mentioned, they acquaint people with the history with what happened on the day of Ashura. His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that there is no objection or harm in such practices, provided that they are not coupled with lies, with falsehood, with exaggeration.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
what actually threatens the religion and the integrity of the religion or the false claims and the exaggerations which are made, and that's not allowed, because when you fabricate stories, then the fabrication will have its negative impact on the audience.
Mm.
So it's very much important to rely on the authentic sources or on the sources or books which have been authored by prominent Shia scholars. There are some very good books written, and these books can be read, can be studied in order to acquaint especially those who play at the actors, that those who play, they, that the scenario should be based on the stories mentioned.
On facts.
On historical facts.
You're yes.
right. So these reenactment programs should not actually undermine the true school of thought, the true school of the Shia, you know, thought. And all concerns must be taken into consideration. And if it is very much likely that those programs might have a negative effect, then of course they should be stopped and people should not take part in those those gatherings.
I see. Just along with the same line as you just what you said, you know, related to reliable sources, I have a question quite related and pertaining to that, you know.
Sure.
We all know that, you know, lots of or some religious organizations, you know, have their ceremonies, these commemorative gatherings for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you know. And some of the accounts which are recited in those ceremonies, in those, you know, majalis, in fact, are about how the Imam Hussein, in fact, peace be upon him, was martyred, or his, you know, friends were martyred there in the Battle of Karbala. They are not quoted, we know, some yes. of them from the reliable sources, you know, and they are heard about, you know, in those majalis, but they said that maybe they heard it from other mujtahids or other scholars, let's say, all right? But when the reciters are asked about the sources of what they say, you know, sometimes they reply that, you know, Ahlul Bayt had taught us this or the same way, and that the account of the Battle of Karbala can be related, can be narrated by way of inspiration as well, and not necessarily through quotation or quoting, right?
Sure.
So the question is, can the historical events be related through inspiration? If it is not the case, what should the position of the listeners of such accounts be?
That's a good question. You know, recounting the events in such a way without any evidence of an authoritative account or quoting from a reliable hadith has no basis.
Mm-hmm.
It is wrong to say or to use one's imaginative faculty and to say that, okay, I have been inspired or somehow I feel that this could be the true case with the event of Ashura. This is, it has no basis. It's wrong to use one's imaginative faculty
mm-hmm.
to narrate stories which are concocted by the individual himself.
Mm-hmm.
Even we know for sure that the event of Ashura was one of the most, you know, heart-rending events that took place in the human history. But it does not become a license for the individual, for any narrator, for any speaker, for any lecturer to make stories and to narrate to the people what is not found in any books authored by the religious authorities. It has been emphasized by the religious authorities, including His Eminence, that the narrators, the lecturers and speakers and eulogists must quote from the sources, from reliable sources. They should not add anything to the story from themselves. Otherwise, they are, you know, it's the duty of the audience to forbid these people, forbid them, to forbidding evil and enjoining good
mm-hmm.
becomes a duty of the Muslim. Because
right.
if someone is just making
right.
lies, mm-hmm. making false claims, then one has to either leave the gathering
mm-hmm.
Or else he should go to the speaker and say, where did you say it from, and what are your references?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important that the speakers should speak based on the references found on reliable references.
I see. Okay, let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
I walk in the night with millions of stars. Your eyes pull me to you, who are you? I walk in the day with millions of angels. I see you in all these faces, who are you?
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We are still talking about the mourning ceremonies and the laws about that, especially during the month of Muharram, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, you know, is it permissible for a woman to be an elegy reciter in such mourning ceremonies or commemorative gatherings, if she knows that men who are non-mahram to her, in fact, would hear her voice?
Well, to be brief, His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, may Allah grant him long life, has said that if the fear of vile consequences exists, they should avoid doing so.
Mm.
You know? Because you know, women who act as an elegy reciter or as an eulogist, she might end up making her voice delicate, attractive, sweet, and she might be heard by men close in the proximity of that building where she is giving an elegy.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of doing something good or something which might earn her sawab, she might commit a sin. And if there is such wild consequences, if there is such fear that it may lead to wild consequences, of course, she should avoid doing it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear audience, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We leave you in Allah's care, and please pray for us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave mankind's heart it awaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new lands.
French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
A goat in the Pakistani city of Karachi has made the headlines for its not-so-ordinary looks. The animal owns strikingly long ears. Simba was only born last month, and his ears have already reached the length of 54 centimeters. The goat's breeder, Muhammad Hassan Narejo, says he has approached Guinness World Records to see if Simba can be included as the greatest of all time for this peculiar feature. The kid is in the center of attention, so he receives all sorts of help to live a smoother life. This includes a special harness for his ears and daily religious rituals to wish him good health. The breeder says why promoting Simba's image, he is trying to introduce Pakistan as a major goat breeding nation. The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Asmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the grey green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyah is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground. There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day, since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021. Thank you.
many people develop deeper relationship with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemasia has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on, from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome. The chest fever in the southern Indian city of Chennai is on a peak as the 44th International Chess Olympiad kicks off there. Students created a mammoth chessboard on the playground and dressed up as 32 chess pieces to promote the game. For 2 weeks, Chennai is hosting nearly 2,000 players from 188 countries. For the first time in nearly 100 years of history of the Chess Olympiad, India is playing host. The event will run until August the 10th. Ahead of the game, 150 underprivileged children from various government schools were given the opportunity to fly. These were the students who won in a district-level chess tournament. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes, the balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zerui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America. Would you buy a pair of scrap tire sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard-sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike, with prices ranging from $2 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the first Indochina War against the French, using tires from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: أعجز الناس من عجز عن اكتساب الإخوان، وأعجز منه من ضيع من ظفر به منهم، وأعجز منه من ضيع من ظفر به منهم.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The most helpless of all men is he who cannot find a few brothers during his life, but still more helpless is he who finds such a brother but loses him."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we are talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. There are so many lessons that we learn from Imam Ali's universal persona, a persona which is a role model for the present day. But interestingly, it has been a role model even for the days of yonder. Imam Ali alayhi salam speaks in a certain place specifically about the dispensation and the meting out of justice by people who are not fit for it. Now, we might think that, giving justice is only something that is done in a court of law. But in reality, in our own various positions in life, we do have certain amount of power and responsibilities as far as meting out and giving justice and the dispensation of justice. So it does apply to each and every one of us in one way or the other. Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that there are two people that are detested by Allah. One is the individual who is devoted to their self. They are a nuisance for those who are enamored of them. Meaning, this individual who is devoted to his self and he makes just judgments upon his whims and desires, they are a problem, a headache for those people who have become in love with them, who hold this kind of unfit individual in high regards. Because not only is that individual themselves misled from the guidance of those preceding them, this individual will mislead those who follow him. So not only are they making up this kind of justice as they go along based upon their whims and their desires and their selfishness, not only are they misleading themselves, not only are they leading to their own destruction, but they're also misleading other people. And Imam Ali says that in their life they are misleading people, and after that individual's death, who mets out justice among the people but are not fit for it, after this individual's death, this person carries the weight of others' people's sins.
as well as being entangled in their own misdeeds. So, dear friends, we must be very careful when we are dispensating justice among the people, whether we are a mother or a father, whether we are an older brother, an older cousin, or whether we are, you know, a superior in the workplace, or we are a religious scholar and a student, or we are a student in front of other students, or we are a friend or a colleague or a coworker. In any aspect that we are faced with the dispensation of justice, we must be incredibly careful to be just when we are in the act of the dispensation of justice. Another comprehensive, beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan, and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my master and my lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the folly, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إنك على كل شيء
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
I just would like to share with you one sentiment or the feeling of a lady who was among the followers of Ahlul Bayt. And this is a lady who is known as Sauda bint Ammara bin al-Ashtar al-Hamdaniya. And she was from the family which believed in Amir al-Mu'mineen, from the Hamdaniya Yemeni family and the tribe. And she was a poetess in her own right. She was talented in composing poetry. Very, very powerful words where she says, صَلَّ الْإِلَهَ عَلَىٰ رُوحٍ فَضَمَّنُهُ قَبْرٌ فَأَصْبَحَ فِيهِ الْعَدْلُ مَدْفُونَ. May Allah shower His salawat and blessings on the soul, تَضَمَّنُهُ قَبْرٌ, when the grave took him in, فَعَصْبَحَ فِيهِ الْعَدْلُ مَدْفُونَ. It was not Ali who was buried in there, it was Adl which was buried with him. Means when Ali went, justice is gone. This is what we get from people like you. And so Muawiyah says, what do you know about the justice of Ali? And she says, I'm actually remembering the day where I went to him with a similar complaint like I've come here today. And I went inside, he was doing his Nafila prayers. He sensed I was there, he shortened his prayers, turned to me and he said, you know, what is your hajat? Why have you come here? And when I presented the case of his revenue officer, who was being, you know, harsh than required in his dealing with the issue of, you know, taking revenue for the government, Amir al-Mu'mineen, according to her, he cried at that time on the musalla, raised his hands and says, Allahumma inni lam amur bi dhulmi khalqik. O Allah, you be witness. I did not ask my officers to be unjust to the people. If someone from my officer has done this, it's not because I have asked them to do this. And he immediately asked for the paper and pen, and he wrote a letter to this person, instructing him to come back as soon as he gets the letter, so that he can then, you know, present his own side of the story.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. We express our condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Javedan. Stay tuned. Oh,
روزی که داشتی معاهده می نوشتی با خدای تبارک و تعالی.
On the day of Ashura, when Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam was reconfirming his allegiance to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the angel of victory was flying over his head in the heavens. Even this angel could help Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam to reach victory on the spots in the battlefield. However, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam had a firm covenant with Allah, and his martyrdom could save the humanity.
Karbala, as I step onto your sand, you capture my eyes. Karbala, I see heaven has been placed here beneath your skies.
Nahala masala be zabane bande goh qarar gozoshte budi.
In my words, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam and Allah signed a treaty, and Imam al-Husayn never tried to violate such a divine treaty. He was faithful to Allah up to an extent that his head went on spears for his goals and mission. The head of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad went on spears, and this was among the first times that this incident happened. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam made a covenant with Allah, and after being slaughtered, he went to Allah to witness him. This is how great Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam is.
Karbala, why do you hold such memories? Ashura, always full of mysteries. Ashura, always full of mysteries.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Javedan. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our new year starts with morning. Muharram is our beginning. The season's tears are flowing. Our iman, we are condoling. Our new year starts with morning. Muharram is our beginning. The season's tears are flowing. Our imam, we are condoling. Karbala, what precious blood was spilled there? Ashura, Al-Hussein was murdered here. Ashura, Al-Hussein was murdered here.
Karbala, why do you hold such memories? Ashura, always full of mysteries. Ashura, always full of
Ashura in Britain.
Part 1.
In 680 AD, there was a tragedy that would change the course of history and scar the face of the Muslim community forever. Muslims are ashamed, but also proud.
Actually, what we see is a manifestation of the human spirit, a yearning for justice.
On this day, Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet of Islam, was brutally murdered along with members of his family. This was simply for his objection to the unscrupulous and unethical kingdom of Yazid.
I have a lot of sadness to think that he was the Prophet's grandson and that he was murdered by the caliph of his time, and that it was a senseless death in its way.
And why is the anniversary of his death, Ashura, commemorated throughout the world, even reaching Britain?
Why did Hussein stand and offer his blood? Was it just because he wanted to be killed? Or there was a message?
We go from the Prophet, we go from Ali, who suffered himself death at the hand of an assassin. And then we move to the next stage, which is the martyrdom of the Prophet's grandson. And so there is a kind of thread, spiritual threads, which connects them all up. And it's a thread which tells us about the fate of a righteous person, a fate of a righteous man.
He knew that he was going to get killed. On the night of Ashura, he told his companions that tomorrow all of us are going to be killed. So anyone who wants to leave, let him leave. He wanted this message to get through to the history, that look, when my grandfather talked about Islam, he did not talk about empire. He did not talk about the Green Palace of Damascus. He did not talk about armies. He did not talk about conquests. What he was concerned about was the spiritual life of Muslims.
It was these principles of Prophet Muhammad that were a source of great inspiration for Hussein. As a child, he looked up to his grandfather as the perfect role model. Prophet loved Hussein dearly.
We know that Hussein, as well as his brother Hassan, were much loved by the Prophet. And he had them on his knee and played with them. So it's quite a movie. Anybody who's been a father or a grandfather know how lovely that is. Imam Hussein was not just, an ordinary man. He was a Prophet's grandson. And he was beloved by the Prophet. And indeed, Ali, the Lion of Islam, and the fourth Khalifa.
In fact, Hussein was loved throughout the entire region. During his life, Imam Hussein very quickly became prominent for his drive to help the poor and enrich the lives of orphans, activities for which his father, Imam Ali, had been renowned. For Hussein to have had someone like Imam Ali as a father was a distinct advantage.
He was a strong advocate of human rights. And he had problems with people engaging in high society gatherings where the poor would be ignored.
In fact, this line of the Prophet's family remains to this day a source of spiritual guidance for millions across the world.
They were strong believers in God because they were strong believers in justice. They were strong believers in humanity. They're strong believers against oppression.
Their principles are studied to this day. Being part of this family, Hussein was well known for his exemplary morals. In fact, he is often compared to Jesus Christ, also a key figure in Islam.
What kind of a conversation would take place in between Jesus, Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, or Moses if they were in a room together today? All these personalities were the same light. They were the same light giving us the message of humanity. And they cannot be restricted to one faith or one faction, but they belong to the whole world.
Jesus had very great concern for the poor, widows and orphans. Those are all things that I've heard about from the life of Imam Hussein. And he would highlight their experience. So they would have had a lot in common to talk about in how the people at the bottom of society should be raised up to the top so that society was focused on caring for them. And one of the famous sayings of Jesus is, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. I'm not familiar with all the sayings of Imam Hussein, but I can imagine that he would have said something very similar, and they would have had a lot of similarities talking to each other.
Interestingly, this expression by Jesus reverberates in the Quran. As Hussein would talk amongst his followers, he would have recited this verse about being accountable on the Day of Judgment, that some will be lowered and others will be raised.
That is the last message that Imam Hussein alayhi salam gave to us, to speak against oppression, to speak against tyranny, to speak for the poor, to speak for the oppressed, to raise our voices, to help them.
The role of Imam Hussein mainly, principally, was to observe and enforce the enjoining what is good and forbidding what is evil. And he was one man who would not bow down before the despotic and tyrant ruler like Yazid.
But who was Yazid? Quite simply, he was a tyrant, the repressive leader of a brutal regime. He had just been appointed by his father, Muawiyah, to rule over the Muslim world. This appointment would have a devastating effect on the history of Islam.
This was a point of no return. Should Islam or the leadership of Islam been kept in the hand of someone like Yazid, we would have now completely a different understanding of Islam. Perhaps we won't have Islam.
He was corrupt in the sense that he would allow mismanagement of the public affairs to be a norm. So it was a total corruption of the right and a total embracing of that which is anti-humanitarian, if you want to put it in those terms.
The Holy Quran considers justice to be the yardstick by which all merits should be measured. Essentially, how can you have peace of mind or peace in society when injustice boasts before your very eyes?
The life that Imam Hussein alayhi salam lives, it actually shouts opposition. He doesn't have to say anything, just the sheer lifestyle he lives, the sunnah he enacts, is a direct opposition to the lifestyle, to the worldview of the Umayyad dynasty. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam was proactive. He brought the war to Yazid.
Yazid knew that Imam Hussein rejected his leadership. This agitated him. He was also aware of people's hidden love for Hussein.
I think Yazid wanted, by obtaining the legitimacy of Imam Hussein, want to be confirmed in his own authority, and he did not feel confident that he was, and he must have been aware also of the degree of popular support that Imam on his side. So it was an attempt to acquire legitimacy, and it was not a legitimacy which was merely, it was not just support of a particular faction, but it was a faction which was a prophet's line. And we know actually even successive caliphs try to get the successors of Imam Hussein on their side.
Yazid knew that he had two choices, either to obtain Imam Hussein's allegiance or to kill him. Either way, Hussein knew that he would not be safe to remain where he was living, just as his grandfather, Prophet Muhammad, all those years ago fled Mecca to Medina. Hussein was now leaving Medina to Mecca. Accompanying him were a small group of close relatives and loyal companions. Whilst Hussein was in Mecca, a movement had begun in a city called Kufa. They had heard of Hussein's refusal to pledge allegiance to Yazid and were gathering support to write letters requesting Hussein to take over leadership in their city.
It is recorded in the history that 18,000 people wrote letters to Hussein. As in some of those letters, we read, فَعَجَّلْ ثُمَّ عَجَّلْ Hurry and hurry, we are waiting for you.
The tragedy was that even in the sanctuary of Mecca, Hussein, the beloved grandson of the Prophet, was not safe. He was in danger, a conspiracy to kill him at the hands of the same people who claimed that they were followers of his grandfather.
I think this is one of those most tragic things, that someone like Hussein, peace be on him, had no other choice. He was left in among the Ummah, having no choice, no place to go. And he said, okay,